From that group of people, you ask for philosophical questions that are candidates for discussion in that particular meeting. And then I'll write them down. Basically, the only guidance that I like to give in terms of, well, what's a philosophical question, because this whole process doesn't take any training, really, but I would just ask that any question that could be settled in some way through an empirical means, scientific means in some way, right, is really not a great question for this conversation. So if you want to know how far away the moon is from Earth, you know, that's what the internet was made for, I guess. Anyway, so not really necessarily a great philosophical question. But other than that, I don't like to restrict it too much, right? Because I don't want to put artificial boundaries on the possible discussions that might happen. Once we have a list of questions, and it can be however long, then we vote as a group as to which question we want to discuss. And usually if there's a fair number of questions, I like to do it in a runoff. There's a name for this voting fashion, but like immediate runoff. So the top two, so you can vote for more than one question, and then the top two vote getters would, you know, compete head to head, so to speak. And then you could only vote once. And the one of the critical things about this process is that when you do vote on a question, by all means, you don't want to vote for the question that you think you definitely know the answer to. Because what we want to avoid in the Socrates Cafe format is sort of, you know, this is not a soapbox for somebody to stand up on and say, this is the way it is, and I'm glad I get to finally straighten you all out. It's hopefully a group exploration of something that we don't have the answers to. And I'm certainly not here to provide any answers. I'm simply the moderator. And so I just try and keep the discussion going, maybe, you know, focus us, bring us back to whatever the topic is. One thing that doesn't happen in this process, at least the way I like to conduct it, and Christopher Phillips started with this, is you don't plan the questions in advance, right? So people can't come in with, you know, little pamphlets and books, and they've been studying the issue so they can sort of lay it all out for us. We're sort of equal on that account in terms of not having any background or necessarily any background in any particular topic. And I guess I should just say that certainly our goal is not to resolve whatever question we come up with here, we vote on. That will not happen. That's not what determines how long we're going to discuss anything. What will determine that is, you know, 9:30, I guess, or so. The sessions are supposed to be about an hour. I would also just say this is a very good size group for this kind of process. I teach at Everett Community College, and sometimes I conduct a Socrates Cafe with, you know, upwards of 60 students. You know, it's a bit unwieldy, but this is a much, you know, more manageable size group. If are there any questions other than the ones they're going to give me here about the process? Does that kind of help? You understand? Okay. Yeah.
You said that Anna Curtis does it differently.
Yeah.
They come with questions already.
So like what they do is they have a Socrates Cafe, and then the end of their meeting, they vote on next meeting's question.
Oh.
And I know some of the individuals, some of who come to Holt Village, but anyway, who participate in this cafe, and they, I think they like to kind of come prepared, quote unquote. Which, you know, I'm sure it maybe produces a different kind of conversation, that's fine, but I prefer it where, you know, nobody's sort of priming the pump and we're just sort of all exploring together, I guess. Yeah?
What is the nature of the actual discussion on the, or how is the discussion conducted? Because at least when I look at the Village Books website, they are, you know, they emphasize civil exchange.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, as compared to what has been happening.
Yeah, on the TV.
Other media.
Right. And I mean, that's usually not something I need to necessarily emphasize. Certainly in this context, you know, it wouldn't be a concern of mine. Even in my classes at the college, you know, it's not typically something we have to worry too much about. Maybe in Bellingham, you know, it's a pretty rough and tumble urban environment there. Anyway, so yeah, I don't think it's going to be too much of a worry here, but certainly we want to be civil. the way it works is that once we decide on the question, as the moderator, I simply say, okay, you know, who has an answer, you know, and then we can just each, whoever has an answer to it, say, well, this is what I'm thinking, you know, this is what I think about it. Once we've kind of gotten those out, then we can explore, you know, a little bit more. And again, this room, of course, is nice because it is fairly circular or oval. And so, I mean, it's not like the conversation goes through me and I'm channeling it, you know, or anything like that. We can talk to each other. Again, I'm just here to sort of, maybe if I see something that, you know, could be probed a little further or something like that, or I need to bring us back to the question, I can do that. Any other questions? Okay.
Did I miss, yep. Is there some kind of a contract one has to sign with an organization? Is it
in order to use
the name Socrates Cafe?
You know, I think that if you go to this website, philosopher.org, I think they might say something about that, you know, trademark or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not particularly onerous. Mostly, I mean, they do want you to contribute. I mean, Christopher Phillips, I don't think he has any other job other than writing books and doing this. So he needs to eat, that kind of thing. But I think basically, last time I checked, is you can pay some money and join, and then you will be able to have access to their directory of Socrates Cafes and things like that. So, yeah. So, like, the one in Anacortes that I started, I didn't check with them first. I actually didn't even tell them we're doing it. I just said, hey, I put a notice in the newspaper, we're going to do a Socrates Cafe. If you'd like to show up, that'd be great. And talk something about, you know, philosophical discourse. I was just trying to move
that. That may not go any higher.
It may not?
I have a feeling it doesn't. Wrong again.
Voila.
He's got the answer.
Yeah. I don't have an eraser, though.
I can give you one.
Oh, okay. All right.
Next door.
Oh, okay. Thanks. While Heather's getting an eraser, we can start thinking about questions if you want to suggest something. And if you're kind of at a loss, I mean, I can give you examples, but I think I'll hold back on that unless we're kind of at a standstill. But, yeah.
What happens to you after you die?
Okay, what happens to you after you die? Thank you. Love that question. So we're done.
Are we truly a democracy? Is the U.S. truly a democracy?
Okay.
Is it better to have a cohesive society at the exclusion of diversity?
We might be able to maybe morph that question a little bit, but...
Yeah, that's too much of a statistic.
Yeah, that would be my guess, right? If we could study somehow before and after.
About the war on terrorism is effective.
Yeah, okay. Is the war on terrorism effective?
Okay.
Is that a way acceptable?
I guess so.
Okay.
Kind of. She has to agree with
it. That's kind of agree. I guess
okay.
You could...
It sums it up.
And timely, given Sunday.
If we didn't,
it doesn't get to her question about what's going on in the other countries about raising soldiers.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, it just seemed like maybe, yeah, as you said, it was maybe more statistical.
Yeah, except you wouldn't be able to answer it in a statistical way because you wouldn't know how many would have been in the Taliban if we didn't go to war. So.
Yeah, not with that.
It's making but that's fine.
Yeah. We'd have to have a control country. And Taliban.
Yeah. Hold a village.
Yes.
Are we living in a parallel universe?
You were the wildlife biologist.
Yeah.
Just have that concrete stuff and just go wild.
All right.
If God is evil, why is there good in the world?
Okay. The problem of good?
Yeah. If God is evil, why is there good in the world?
He's done this one before.
Yeah. He probably has the answer too, so he can't vote for it. But we all could. Okay. Any? I could say go away, go away, gone, since we don't have a whole lot of time tonight. So can you all read those? Do I need to go over them? Okay, so what I would say is in the first round of voting, we have, it looks like, 6 different questions. Go ahead and feel free to vote for more than one if you'd like. Of course, if you vote for them all, you haven't really voted. So just hold back a little bit. But having said that, let's look at the first one. What happens to you after you die? How many would like to discuss that this evening? And you're not voting for one. If you know the answer to this one, don't vote for this one, but do tell us. Okay.
And if it was your question, you shouldn't vote for it.
No, I was just teasing.
You were. Oh.
Village pastor coming up with a question about God. Were you voting for that?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're up to 3 on 4.
Okay. You could vote for more than one.
You can vote for more than one in this round. Yeah. And it's also not a popularity contest if your question doesn't get very much. We're not voting anybody off the island or anything like that. Is the U.S. truly a democracy? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Moving targets are 6, looks like 6. All right. Okay. Is it better to have a cohesive society at the exclusion of diversity? Ooh. 14. Okay. Is the war on terrorism effective?
We know the answer.
All right, everybody has to answer that one. Are we living in a parallel universe? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 on that. All right, that's 6, 4. Okay, and then finally, if God is evil, why is there good in the world? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, so now, so that makes it come down to, well, we'll do the runoff round now. You're only going to vote for one this time, the one about is it better to have a cohesive society, the exclusion of diversity, or you vote for if God is evil, why is there good in the world? Could you explain that? So just vote for one or the other. So how many would like to vote for the first one about the cohesive society? I'm going to be accurate this time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then how many about God? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, so looks like we're going to talk about this.
Darn. Yeah. Well, we want to hear what Scott had to say about it.
Well, if you're here tomorrow, you can meet again and choose the next one.
Are you doing this tomorrow?
I will all be gone, but if you will be here. You don't need me. You don't need me.
As a Socratic fashion, you can always ask questions.
So, I'm just going to erase these just to make it a little clearer here. So, is it better to have a cohesive society at the exclusion of diversity? I guess, and we might say that the other part of that is, Or would it be better to have, you know, a diverse society, so cohesive or diverse, which is better? Is that another way to put it? Okay. And at this point, we're just, you know, I'm not going to write anything down here because we're not trying to come up with the answer, but what do you think?
So I'm just going to throw this out there. I don't think you can have a cohesive society without diversity.
Okay.
That's not a question, that's just a reaction to that. You cannot have a cohesive society without diversity. That's the premise that
all right.
I'm reacting to. So.
All right. And then
I'm not sure I can defend it, but I just kind of think.
Sure, yeah. And I think sort of in this first initial conversation, we'll just each throw out what we think, you know, if we want, and then we can come back to certain things if we want. So who else has a response?
So you're saying that those aren't competitive in a way, diversity or cohesion, but that...
Exactly.
Okay.
Need to
be.
Use
our country as an example.
What is cohesion?
Yes.
How do we define cohesion?
So, what we might say is we'll get into these things, but let's see, you know, hear from the group what we think in terms of, I understand we will need to look at what does that mean, but do we have any initial reaction, like you were just saying, you know, this is your initial reaction.
Gut reaction.
Yeah. So, but we will get to that. I think we have to. Yeah.
I began to think, do I even know what a cohesive society is? And to me, is that the same as being homogeneous? Mm-hmm. And is that something that happened when this country was being settled and, you know, large families came out together or from the same village in another country?
Okay.
But I don't know if I've ever experienced, I don't even know what that is.
Well, I was born in what is considered a fairly cohesive first world country, Sweden. Homogeneous, boring to some, because there is not the kind of struggles, the kind of turmoil, at least on the surface, that you see in, now, some can say, okay, that's great, you know, I don't have to think about whether I'm offending somebody or what is it the social norms are. And in some ways that can be a very secure thing, but then at what point then do you stop growing? Because you don't have that kind of tension from other parts of the social fabric that actually help grow. I mean, there are times this country drives me nuts because it's splintering in so many directions. And there are other times, God, I wish I were home again. And I mean back, home again. Not just Minnesota.
Okay.
So, you know, it's this cohesiveness has its benefits and yet diversity also.
Okay.
You know, I don't know that you can necessarily separate them that well.
Mm-hmm.
And
sorry. I saw a hand up earlier. I just wanted to make sure I didn't skip that. Did you? You right there? I'm sorry.
Cohesiveness. That's really cohesiveness can be boring, but it can also be, you know, since we're talking about what's a cohesive society, it can also be violent. You know, I think that's what Hitler was, generating. You know, this like, you know, nonstop violence and empire building, and you know, so it can be whatever somebody decides that's going to, you know, the forces that be decides what it's going to be. So, I mean, cohesive society could be full range.
Did you want to? Yeah.
So I think that often societies or even smaller groups often form because there is some cohesion of individuals that want a certain thing, but just over time, the entropy diversity tends to enter the situation via new people coming in, or maybe the original founding people have children who don't have exactly the same ideas. And so if that society hasn't built something to deal with how they're going to be able to support a group that contains diversity, that society just won't last very long. Because I think diversity will just inevitably show up over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was just thinking that diversity can go underground. You know, like the Underground Railroad, like the, you know, I think societies can exclude diversity, but it's, you know, it's going to emerge and be some shape or form, you know, the landscape, whether it's underground or overt, I don't think you can squelch completely diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Another context that I sometimes think about this in is social programs and faith-based social justice ministries, and because the example sometimes of talking to a colleague of mine who has a different view than I do is that, well, government doesn't need to run social organizations because faith-based societies or community-based societies should run those types of organizations. But my feeling is that that only works if you're in a fairly already cohesive and homogeneous society. And so I see a trade-off between society being able to just inherently support itself or support its social support organizations that help build the less well-off socially,
mm-hmm.
And as opposed to, you know, needing more structure in a society specifically because it's not so cohesive. So maybe all I'm trying to say is there's a financial side to the equation too, or can be seen that way, or governmental side to the question. So it's not an answer, it's just a frame.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's pretty difficult to try to force cohesion onto anything, even if you have one variable amongst a group of people that's homogeneous at some level, there's going to be another variable that diverges even for people within the member of that group. So people may naturally tend to congregate in, you know, small groups that are relatively similar and cohesive, but I think society, you know, may not be a well-defined term, but society in my mind tends to be a larger group of people, and so even if you start putting these relatively homogeneous groups together at a societal level, there's going to be diversity there, like it or not. And so it's, I think you can't expect to be successful in excluding diversity. There has to be sort of some balance between the two.
Yeah, I think if, like, now I think we're hearing a couple times, some people might think that diversity is sort of inevitable. And then I think the question becomes, well, if it's inevitable, should we do as much as we can to squelch it or to bring people together, if that's the case? Yeah.
I was thinking of two groups in terms of this. One is Holden, which has a lot of cohesive society built in and homogeneous stuff. But it's existed for 50 years because of the diversity. When someone rolls off the bus and says, yes, I know how to wire that, or having just come from that. And the other one, of course, I was thinking of Moses and the people he led. You know, they are, of course, cohesive some way. But they had to have all the skilled people that could keep things going and in building the temple too, or the tent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I don't know how you could have one without the other. Yes.
But the question is qualitative about which is better.
I know.
And, you know,
separate.
That's really kind of where the question hangs. Is I'm hearing that there's good and problems on both sides of that question, but is one better than the other?
Is it better to have diversity at the exclusion of cohesive society?
It seems to me there's also a question of what do we mean by cohesion? You know, as we approach the 10th anniversary of the terrorist attacks on Sunday, I'm reminded of the kind of spirit of almost a McCarthyite sort of spirit that kind of seized this country for a while after 9/11, where to disagree with, at that point, the Bush administration's foreign policy was then considered to be like less than patriotic. And so that was a vision of kind of cohesion that was, had a cohesion that was sort of a forced cohesion as unanimity or something like that. Or that broke no dissent, but it seems like there's a sort of cohesion that can have a different kind of cohesion that can have a kind of a wide diversity within it, but that can be held. And I guess that's how I would want to see kind of life in the cohesion of the church at its best would be a kind of cohesion where a thousand flowers bloom, but yet there's somehow there's a commonality within the diversity.
So. Well, also cohesion that is the result of an outside force,
right. Yeah.
An event or something,
mm-hmm.
versus one that is the result of an internal agreement, a kind of commonness of vision, for want of a better word. You know, which are we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And is one type of cohesion better than the other?
I mean, I would say just at this point, I mean, society always exists in an environment. You know, internal and external factors, and I mean, maybe an initial thought I have is that it's the you know, I imagine a needle from cohesion to diversity, and where that should be pointing is probably going to be dependent on the situation, right? Because if you're, I'm not saying 9/11 was like this, because I don't think it was, but if you're talking about somebody in a war situation, diversity isn't as valuable. Because you need unit cohesion, right? That's a phrase. On the other hand, if you know, other circumstances obtain, then if you have too much cohesion, then you're not going to get the diversity of views that are going to help you to see the next thing to do.
I mean, I was thinking all of a sudden, it just flashed on me, maybe because I read a little blurb on the Martin Luther King Memorial. The whole civil rights movement. There was, at least in the southern part of the United States, a great cohesive kind of agreement that these people had no rights, and what they were doing, what they were asking for, was wrong. And yet, it required that the country as a whole opened itself to diversity that it had not prior to that. You know, it was a struggle, and it still is a struggle in many areas. And again, we get cohesion, diversity. Better?
Mm-hmm.
I like your image of the needle because it says
yeah.
to me that I think it's inherently, it's just going to be a dynamic process, and it could be dangerous to try to force the needle in one direction or another if you're not taking into account current environment, current circumstances. So it's not necessarily that you always want to be at one end of the scale. That helps me think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the Tea Party fall in all this? or the comp, you know, I guess the media understanding. I'm not sure exactly, but you know, you get the idea that there is a cohesion among at least a group out here, but I'm not so sure sometimes.
Well,
but that's the way they're portrayed, the members or those politicians who supposedly are labeled that way, that they all follow a certain set of, and I don't know what they are.
Was there something?
Oh, you know, using the Tea Party as an example, I mean, the Tea Party is a sort of outcropping, you know, that's rose out of something, and but they could just as easily become normative. And then they're the cohesive society, and they're not diverse, you know, there's not a lot of diversity in that. So, I mean, something just like the civil rights, the status of civil rights for people as it was in the 50s is, you know, what they were fighting for in the 50s. I'm not saying they got it all, but it's normative now. It's a little bit more normative than it was. So what was an issue of diversity or
but
not
there are
mainstream
some who still don't
changes.
Accept that.
It's not an all or nothing, but I'm just saying it's what was not mainstream becomes mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
So that shifts things too.
Certain values get adopted by the wider society, and that's part of what binds us together.
And it's not seen as diversity anymore. It's not unusual. It's more of the part of the cohesive society.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, going back to the needle, you know, it goes all over the place.
So where is the needle now?
I don't know where the needle is, but I think that in terms of how the needle moves in society, how I think it should move, it is not a linear relationship necessarily, and I'll explain that a little more. If the needle is at 1 now, it should be easier for the needle to go back to 0 at center than to go to 2,
mm-hmm.
you know, further this way. It should be, society should resist having the needle more one way or the other way, just sort of inherently as part of that, maintaining that balance, I think. Whether it does, I don't know, but it seems like what we're getting to is that balance is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you just reset what the middle is, like when these smaller movements come about, which is a form of diversity, and then it eventually gets incorporated as the norm, which I guess you could say is cohesion, but it's still just as different as it was when they started. It's just that you haven't, it's like you added more numbers or something. Like it just shifts the whole
scale.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what happens in our elections a lot of the time, national elections. Now, last time we elected Obama, and then we have this Tea Party group that's way over on the other side trying to move, and probably in our next election, it'll be way over there, and then we'll get upset with that, and then we'll bring it back to the other side again.
Mm-hmm.
But I see that and that type of phenomenon as kind of pointing toward diversity is overall beneficial because it forces change and forces society to adapt and grow, and whether you're talking about United States generally or whether you're talking about like a club or, you know, somebody's family or whatever, you know, diversity to me as I'm thinking about this is a very sustaining, necessary force, and talking about Darwinian evolution and all this, mm-hmm. you know, idea of diversity really being the key to survival. Because if you don't have these little groups popping up, you're never going to get the next big idea or the next key organism that's going to survive, you know, the next mm-hmm. millennium or however it goes.
And remember Babette's Feast, the film you saw, that cohesive society was dying. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the diversity, and there were no more children, and you just got older, and you know, so.
But thinking nationally, I think the United States historically has indicated that for us, diversity is a higher priority.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of how we've been shaped as a nation. Then I see how Norway responded to the terrorist attack. And I think for a country like Norway, cohesion is a higher priority and has been historically. And it works in a country like Norway because until very recently, it was very homogeneous, both ethnically, religion-wise.
Education.
It deals with, it's dealing with immigration. I understand that. But I think historically, because of the kind of nation it is, for Norway, cohesion is a higher priority. And it's a cohesion of values. It's not just their white skin or their blonde hair or whatever, but I think there's a very strong cohesion of liberal and very sort of outlooking, forward-looking values that predominate in Norway. And their response to the terror attack that they had, it seems to me, showed that. When they said, we will not give in to this kind of thing, and we won't give in to fear, and we will not give in to labeling people. Mm-hmm. Very different than our response, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. So. Still focusing on that word, better.
And what I just heard, just to focus that on that, I mean, I just heard that for Norway, I'm hearing it's better to have a cohesive society,
yeah.
Whereas it sounded like maybe, or perhaps we might say for the United States, it's better to have a diverse society. We could suggest that.
Have we defined cohesion? What it means under...
You were just saying values, right?
Yes, that would be one way to summarize it.
Because we have diverse values in this country.
Diverse
values.
I can't help but sort of going back to that, to sort of rearranging that a little bit and asking the question, if you could feed more people, because we have a diverse society and some are hungry and some are not, if you could feed more people, would you do it if it meant giving up some of your own freedom?
Some of your own what?
Freedom.
Mm. Or is a cohesive society better at feeding everyone than a diverse one?
You can do that.
Mm.
This is kind of the realm of politics here, but I'm looking at, say, Scandinavia, or say, Germany. Like, they have a very multi-party system. It's very, while generally left of ours, it's still, and seems a little more cohesive, it also is very, I mean, there is a nuance and people can kind of get into their little diverse categories. And here, you know, much broader country, many more people, and we have to, like, kind of join a little, one of two parties, and they're, it doesn't seem to, I guess, provide as much good discourse to have just diversity in like two packs.
Mm-hmm.
and a snipe. Thought.
And yet, is there some advantage to having, you know, theoretically, the majority of the population be in support of, you know, the elected person, as opposed to having, you know, a diverse field of candidates, say six candidates, where the elected person could have 20% of the vote. I mean, I think I agree with you, Andy, on this.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, the other thing, and you can't say that the majority of people in the U.S. would even, like, that's
exactly.
Just not the way voting, like, not everyone votes, and there's not, no one ever gets over 50% of the votes anyway, so it's not like there's even that.
And we seem to manage, is that your point? I mean, like, and...
Well, I mean, I don't think it's
just
exactly the comparison
being
made,
right.
Because... I mean, there's still not more than 50% voting for one person. It's still a minority that's supporting the one party that's winning. Maybe it's probably still more than in the multi-party systems, but it's still not over half.
You also wonder about that because it's manipulated so completely by outside external forces that aren't relevant to the political discourse, media,
right.
Passion, whatever. You know, it's quite skewed in that way. So I would contend that the 50% is probably optimistic.
Right.
In terms
but
of
I
informed
mean,
electorate.
What you were saying earlier kind of put in my mind something that, I don't know, maybe it's another way to get a handle on this question as well. In terms of group dynamics, and if you have you're on a committee or in a group or something like that, and how are you going to proceed? And sometimes, like at my college, you know, the idea is that, you know, you will proceed by consensus. Well, versus what we just did over here was a brutal, remember the voting? It was brutal. And you know, it wasn't consensus, right? So that's another view. And I mean, I know a lot of people are like, let's have a group, you know, agree, and by consensus we'll do things versus voting, some sort of democracy. I don't know if people have strong feelings about that, but maybe that's another way to get a handle on that. Whereas consensus I'm associating with cohesion, right? Bring people together versus we're going to vote and some of you are going to lose, which would be the diversity.
Julie, you know, the Quakers do function on consensus, and my understanding of that is that, so it's interesting that you say that, that if there's one person, you know, who doesn't disagree, they recognize that person, and they continue to have dialogue with that person without reaching consensus until that person either continues to disagree or, you know, sits down and says, okay.
Sort of like the Iowa caucus?
Yeah, and so it's not exactly a cohesiveness, you know, it's not like majority rule.
Mm-hmm.
In that process, they are still recognizing the diversity, you know, that one person. So
there's also a minority report in a consensus gathering. I've been a part of that, and I've been the minority report, which makes you go, well, is it cohesive or not? Because it's just you wanted to move forward, but also have the documentation there. To be diverse anyway.
Mm. But at least there's still, like, you still get your report, you still get to feel like you're being heard, which I think is why, I think that has a lot to do with why people are so angry right now in the U.S., is that one thing is happening and the people that are standing for the thing that isn't happening just feel like no one's listening to them and no one cares about them. It's just creating a very angry sort of situation. And making a fight even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Where maybe if you had something where there could be more discussion and more compromise and more giving in, then I could get along a little better.
More Socrates cafes.
If only Congress went.
Mm-hmm.
there another, somebody else going?
Although, I mean, at the end of the day, the point of a Socrates Cafe is not to come up with an answer, whereas, practically speaking, the government has to come up with an answer. So there's a lot less pressure in the situation.
But we are the government. We are. Through voting and through writing letters, we are the government. Yeah. It's our voice.
But right at the end of the day, there's still a decision made, whereas here,
yeah,
we don't have to. The point is not to make a decision.
The point seems to be to educate ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The other guy does have a point. Just because you don't agree with it doesn't mean that you shut them off. And yet that seems to be, at times, the way some of these dialogues or even debates, if you will, are cast, is I have to shut you down. That's how I win. Is I have to negate you, I have to eliminate you from contention. That's what children do. And yet that seems to be the level at which some, at least some, to me it seems like the political, I listen to some of these debates and you're talking past each other. Mm-hmm. You're so busy trying to score points. I don't know where you're at. And it may be diverse views, but it's not a kind of diversity that I think is healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me that points out the danger of, if there is a danger of too much diversity, because, you know, at some point you have to get something done. And so, you know, there are certain views that are just not, I'll go ahead, you know, I'm a philosopher, I can say whatever I want, but, you know, not worth listening to, because they're so irrational or whatever they are. So that's the, I mean, there. I think there is a danger there. And maybe it is shutting certain people down, but if you have to get something done, that has to be done at some point. You can tell I'm not much of a consensus person. But, I mean, Judy's point earlier, I didn't want to get away from that. We can maybe recall it now. You know, if a cohesive society is better at feeding people than a diverse one, right, is that something we need to consider? You know, you think of certain authoritarian societies, cohesive through the, you know, through the rifle or whatever, but maybe they're better able to, like China, you know, better able to organize their resources to make sure famine is eliminated from that society. But of course, people.
Was that true in China, of course?
Pardon me?
That hasn't really always been true in China,
yeah,
of course.
But I mean, the idea, right?
Breaking forward, condemned 30 million Chinese to death. Basically.
Also, currently, in North Korea.
Yes. I'm not. I understand what you're saying. Stephen Chen's a theory, right?
We could go to the extreme of both. Yes, and that's, I think, sometimes what happens is that in the process of trying to argue your side, the willingness to bring up absolutely absurd, extreme examples of if you go down this path, this is what's going to happen. No. Most people are, you know at what point it's time to bring this to a halt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. It's very hard sometimes to know where you need to draw that line.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at, you know, you started going down a path that I think is the right way to go, is you look at historic history and
mm-hmm.
look at which societies we think are cohesive. China is an example.
Norway.
Were they successful? Norway is another good example. Were they better because they were they more successful whatever they wanted to do, whether it's feed people or create war, wage war, whatever, were they, because of their cohesiveness, you know, were they better for that? I think that might be the way, right way to explore kind of this idea. Looking at history, did we see, you know, what happened in China, what happened in Nazi Germany, what happened in Norway, in the United States when it was attacked? Which of those societies reacted perhaps in a way that was perhaps, you know.
I mean, also I think about the history in the United States, those times that there was cohesiveness.
When was that?
Yeah, I know.
Give me an example of
that. Not often, but
we didn't have cohesiveness in World War II. We confined people to internment camps who looked differently from us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's an example that history, a bitter American lesson in history. If your name was Schultz during World War I, bad name to have.
Yeah.
You know. Go ahead, please go ahead, but I just wanted to...
I mean...
I'd like to hear an example of when America was a cohesive society.
I don't know that you could even... It's just such a huge number of people. I don't know that you're ever going to get 100% cohesion. I think you just have to talk
relative
about the
cohesion.
Times when we were the most cohesive.
And is
relative.
The cohesiveness what others perceive? I mean, there are visions, I'm sure, out there in the world of the United States as somehow this
united.
These type of people that you can always tell in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you know, and there are those who swarm. You know, you can always tell in America because they.
They're the ones with the Canadians' flags on their backpacks.
Yeah.
No,
this sort of thing.
I know
what you say. But you know, we're talking about the Chinese, billion plus people. I have a feeling they're not as cohesive as we would like them to be.
Well, is there a difference between forced cohesion and voluntary cohesion as well?
I don't think forced cohesion is
well,
possible.
But we were
yeah.
talking earlier about, you know, like say North Korea.
Maybe
you know,
brain
as,
yeah.
you see them, you know. No one can make people march in lockstep and look cohesive like a dictatorship, right? But is that cohesion? And,
yeah.
You know, I've noticed, there was a documentary on the, maybe some of you saw this, about the last generation of children growing up in communist Russia or the Soviet Union. And they were interviewing these children who are now adults, and they were, you know, they were doing all the things that they were forced to do. But they, in the interviews, they said, but we were thinking this. We were listening to the Beatles. We were, you know, anti, you know. They were doing things, even though they were coerced to conform to this unified society, they were up here, they were still individuals, and they were still had that diversity, even in Soviet Russia,
yeah.
Soviet Union, in 1958 or whenever it was, before the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know.
So there's a difference between the outside perception
yeah.
and mm-hmm. the actual internal cohesion. That would be an example of something where it might appear cohesive, but actually doesn't have the glue on the inside.
It's really hard to
when you get inside that, because I've seen pictures recently from Beijing, Shanghai, some of the other large Chinese, and you really have to look hard to be able to know that it's in China, not New York.
Exactly.
Because the people, the clothes, the cars, everything.
The Western
you know, until somebody says this was taken in Beijing, not on Fifth Avenue, and you wouldn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
What's an example of a diverse society? We've been talking about cohesive society and coming up with kind of dictatorship or or Holden Village, somewhere. So what's a diverse society example be like? San Francisco, the city, is diverse in...
isn't the United States
Is the United States, yeah, is that the most diverse society in the world, or in the middle, or?
Well, it's called the melting pot, which would be racially diverse, economically, education, social justice. Are we diverse? Are we a diverse society?
I think the country was kind of grounded on principles of, you know, I guess not diversity per se, but just being able to think what you want to think and believe what you want to think. And I think that's something that tends to encourage diversity of all forms, not ethnically.
On a very small scale, in Indianapolis, when people from New Orleans needed a place to live, people needed to get out. The churches in the northern part of the city met to figure out if they had a home, if there was someplace that could do it. And they met 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 and they met. And they finally got someone to come way north.
Oh.
And they couldn't stay because there was really no support services around. And my daughter's mother-in-law, who's part of the conservative synagogue, Jewish, those Hadassah men, women met, and in 1 hour they had 7 apartments furnished completely.
In the same city?
Yeah. Oh. So, we all had stuff in our base. We had stuff around, we didn't need it, and no one used it.
And are you saying that the diversity, like, how are you fitting diversity?
Well, okay, the cohesive society of the Jewish women worked the best band. Whereas as wonderful Christians in our diversity of our different purchases where we sit, we just could not barely function.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the Christians were cohesive.
Well, they wanted to do something, but they had worries and fears and not able to give. I mean, they came up with one house way far north, and it didn't work when their family got there. So, and there were many, many communities trying to do this one thing, whereas one community supplied for 7.
But diversity seems to be the rule, doesn't it? It's hard if we're having trouble defining it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Small societies are a little easier. Holden
mm-hmm.
Village,
that's
the Jewish
right.
club, Jewish synagogue.
Holden Village, a good example of a diverse society.
Yeah.
Is Holden Village an example of a diverse society, social justice-wise?
In some ways, but noticeably not so in racial ways.
Yeah.
Except for I've been up here this summer, and there's been 300 Latino family members here. I was thinking, where I come from, Chelan County, I have been exposed to so much more diversity here than where I live.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you live?
I live in Leavenworth.
Oh, Leavenworth, yeah. Leavenworth.
Or
yeah,
Eastern Washington.
Holden
is very diverse.
Holden's a puzzle, I guess, yeah.
Well, I feel like I'm an outsider. A lot of you have been here to Holden before many times. This is really my first time. It seems homogeneous, you know, in a sense, as an outsider. I'm from Seattle. I teach in a community college. There's every nation in the world there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lovely place to visit, but I feel like I want to break out sometimes. I really do just have to say that. I like it here. I mean, I could be comfortable here, but it's not challenging me in ways that... So, and that's not a negative thing. It's just, it's very homogeneous here, perhaps as an outsider. So when Mike does things like rewrite Ecclesiastes, I'm just on my feet, like, yay, go ahead, Mike. Sorry, Mike.
I mean, also, most of what I'm hearing here has been cultural diversity. What about economic diversity? Because there's another Bell town instead of Washington called Bellevue and Bellingham. And, you know, one of the things in Bellingham that some people don't realize till they've been there a little while is that we're the terminus, the southern terminus for the Alaskan ferry system. Mm-hmm. We have a rather, not significant or large or anything like that, but there is a portion of the population that have come to Bellingham with the idea of getting on the Alaskan ferry, getting up to Alaska to work the oil companies, the pipeline. So it's not so much now, but it used to be a real problem. They run out of money. We have a homeless population, and yet you don't really see them, but they are there. The Lighthouse Mission has always got a lineup in front of it. Our church is very heavily involved with feeding the homeless. They haven't gone away, despite all the programs, despite all the attention. And it's all because of where we're located. And it's that economic, you know, that there are people who, through sometimes no fault of their own, just circumstances, they can't make, and yet there are literally millionaires just a mile away. I mean, there was, I opened up the Bellingham paper real estate section last Sunday, and there was a house for sale for $3 million. You know, and it's just this the sandwiches and the coffee and the soup on the sidewalk 4 days a week, and yet here we have somebody in town who's selling the house for $3 million.
Yeah.
And this.
Can I ask a process kind of question about the Socratic Cafe? How do you end these things? let me suggest that it would be in sync with the Socratic method to simply find questions that we would end with that would be of a substantive character or better than this question, more refined, or, you know, an example might be, in order to have a healthy society, what characteristics or what complementary values besides cohesion and diversity should be considered? You know, maybe there are other questions in order to. And I'm not wanting to end this. I'm just thinking about leaving with a better question, not with any kind of certainty or answer.
Yeah, well, I think we've been doing that to some extent, right? Pushing this question in different directions and, you know, like you're saying, right? And I think that that's one thing that just happens in this process. I think to end this really, really in the spirit of Socrates, we would all just walk away. But probably won't do that. Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. I mean, it is 9:36, and so, you know, we need to end it at some point. I mean, another way I was thinking about tweaking the question. Is it would since we're all here in this context, would Holden Village be better to have more cohesion or more diversity? You know, I don't know.
And there you have to define cohesion and diversity again.
Yes.
So within the context.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a real challenge
for diversity now with all the influx of the people working on the crew and
that's right.
And all the skilled people we're going to need for those 2 years of overhaul and reinvent for Holden. I mean, it's going to really change. It's I'm going to go from cohesion to diversity.
What I would say, to kind of follow up on your point there, sir, this would only pertain to anybody here who might be at a staff meeting next Wednesday, just to put that question to staff meeting, and just that's like throwing a wrench in the works, and then the staff meeting explodes. But I'm just teasing. I've been to a few in the past. But yeah, I don't know. For some reason, this particular trip, in terms of the homeless, I thought, you know, maybe Houlton Village needs one person to be a homeless person. Like, on an, you know, you have to take turns. But to for the diversity issue. What was that?
You take turns.
I volunteer.
Yeah, I mean, because I certainly understand your point in terms of the economic diversity that isn't really present here for the most part. And so
how
forth.
Do you know there's nobody here that's homeless?
Yeah.
Well,
they're not homeless in the village.
Yeah, that's what I'm, you know, they're not homeless in the village. I I'm not talking about
that. But Houlton has a sliding scale for funding, so
yeah.
I think there is a big economical diversity
okay.
here,
mm-hmm.
here in Houlton.
Right, which maybe we don't, we kind of, since everybody has a warm place to sleep and so forth in the village, we don't see it.
Yeah.
And is it valuable to see that, you know, or is it nice to come to a place that's so unlike central Seattle to, you know, to take a break from that?
Yeah.
I don't know. But, it's probably best, and I don't know.
yeah.
At any rate, yeah, so maybe we should.